From Polydor Records, here comes The Who's Quadrophenia Radio Special with Roger Daltrey and Peter Townsend.
Hi, this is Roger Daltrey of The Who. I'd like to talk about and play you some of the stuff from Quadrophenia, which was an album we recorded in 1973, and we've just finished making a film of it. There's not a lot of music left on the film, but it's very interesting. When we recorded Quadrophenia in 73, it was obviously going to end up a film, and this was at the time they were talking about filming Tommy. One of the problems we've had in actually turning it into a film is that most of the music on the original album is too explanatory. That once you put a visual to it, most of the words don't mean anything. I mean, the words are just about the visual. And we've had quite a few problems in that area.
The original album of Quadrophenia was a double album, and when we came to rework the music and the music we selected from the soundtrack of the film for the record, we decided to split the soundtrack album into two halves. One half would be the music of the period, which is the 60s, 64s and 65s. So we've got an album of the tracks of the kind of music that the kids from our area were listening to, the Tamla Motown tracks and the blues tracks and stuff like that. And so we were left with one album in which to condense and harden up the material from the original double. And we selected various tracks from the original double album. We re-recorded various parts of them. We remixed them. We even included a couple of tracks which weren't included on the original album because of their novelty value. There were tracks which hadn't been heard before and which were written for the thing but didn't fit at the time.
Quadrophenia was a lot easier to make into a film than Tommy. It had... far less holes in the storyline. On the surface, it looks a very simple story about a guy who goes down to the seaside, comes home again, goes back. But it's just the life of a guy, 10 days in the life of a young adolescent mod, and his aspirations and his disillusionment with what he thought was so important 10 days before. You know. It encapsulates quite a lot of our adolescence. You know, it's very interesting. I don't know how Americans are going to take it. Americans do have a lot of problems understanding thick Cockney accents, so they're going to have to work at watching this film, I tell you. It's not going to be easy. But if they can just ignore just the artifacts, I mean, the fact that kids are riding around on scooters, and just get through to the actual people in the film, then it is a universal subject. And I hope people will at least give it that try in the States, you know. When we started to make the first original album of Quadrophenia, the basic idea that it was the four sides of the band, four sides of the whole, if you like, hence Quadrophenia, that we encapsulated it into being one character who was double schizophrenic. To me, one of the root songs of the whole thing is a song called I'm One, which I feel says a lot about the way I felt when I was a 17-year-old kid back in England in 19... God knows when. It is, to me, one of the most important numbers on the album. And it's, like I say, it's called I'm One.
Every year is the same, and I feel it again. I'm a loser, no chance to win. Leaves start falling, come down is calling, loneliness starts sinking in.
This is Roger Daltrey, and that was one of the tracks from Quadrophenia called I'm One. This is Roger Daltrey again, talking about Quadrophenia. When we first got the kind of basic script of, of what the film was going to finally end up like, or what they hoped it would end up like. It isn't really that much different from Pete's synopsis on the original Quadrophenia album cover. And there was a part in it for they were going to try and find a band, a young band, to represent what the Who were in those days. And I auditioned hundreds of bands in England. God, hundreds and hundreds. To try and find a group which I thought would kind of fit that role. And we didn't find anyone. But I did find a young band that suit the film. They really do look right. I don't know where they've been for the last 20 years. They were 17-year-old kids. But if you look back at old film, it's very strange. If you look back at old film, kids in 1963, they had an incredible innocence about them, which kids today haven't got, you know. It was murder to try and find kids like that. But I did manage to find one band, and they came from Rochester, somewhere south of London. And they looked dead right. They've got this wonderful, innocent quality about them, which was, I thought was very lucky. And they did two tracks which are on the soundtrack album. They did High Heel Sneakers and an old John Lee Hooker number which we used to do called Dimples.
We were faced with a very different problem on the Quadrophenia album to film evolution, as it were, than with Tommy. Tommy was a story, it was a fantasy, and as such it was the kind of thing that you could hand over to a director like Fellini or Schlesinger, or as it turned out, Ken Russell, and say, listen, you interpret this music that way. And the resultant Tommy album, which did very well in its own right, which was attached to the film, was very different from The Who's original album. In this case, the problems are different. Quadrophenia was music about a real event, about real life. It was about our childhoods and about the childhoods of the kids around us at the time. And so selecting a director for the film was a slightly different proposition. We were looking for more of a documentary type director. And the problems involved in producing the record were very different too, because we didn't actually want to just to produce a record which was exactly the soundtrack of the film, because Tommy was all music and Quadrophenia isn't. Quadrophenia contains dialogue and as such is probably only music in about a third of the film. So we thought we'd try to make the album of Quadrophenia give an impression of the period, both using tracks from the Quadrophenia album and the reworkings, and also songs from the period.
One of my favourite tracks on Quadrophenia is Keith Moon's theme on the album, sung by Keith. It's very, very fond memories for me of him actually recording it. I mean, everything he ever did while he was with us stays in me, somewhere in my mind, you know. And it's a track called Bellboy. It's got so much of Moon's spirit on it, it's wonderful. And this is still one of the tracks that's in the film. All the tracks I've chosen actually are tracks that are still managed to survive in the film. That was Bellboy, a record from Quadrophenia, sung by myself and featuring Mr. Keith Moon on vocals. It's a track from our forthcoming film of Quadrophenia, and this is Roger Daltrey. This is Roger Daltrey of The Who. I still find it very difficult to articulate how I really do feel about it, Keith dying. I don't feel grief, I never did. It freed the group of so many problems, in a way. It was like almost like a sacrifice. He was so close, I mean, the loss, I mean, like I say, it's so hard to articulate it, but the one thing it did do, it brought the band very, very close together. It made us realise how bloody lucky we are. Keith Moon showed the world how to live, and we're just more determined than ever to go on, carrying on with the spirit of The Who, because I think The Who, I've always said it's more than a band. You see, you can't go on writing songs like Pete Townsend's written over 15 years and not have a kind of obligation. It's almost like an obligation that it isn't. I can't find the word, but it's like you've got a responsibility to your fans. I mean, and a big responsibility. Pete's songs have helped a lot of frustrated people through very difficult periods of their life. I think that's the way he writes, and that is the importance of The Who. I'm not trying to sound overblown. I'm just trying to really be honest about the way I feel it is. And Keith's death has made me more than ever want to carry that on until the day that it stops becoming important. And I still feel that we've got our best work to do. I really do.
I'm sorry he's gone and all that, but we're carrying on. We're carrying on. We're carrying on to some extent. Not that The Who is a tombstone to him, but we're carrying on and we feel he's still about in a way. Now and again, we still feel him kicking away in the background. We're carrying on because he would have wanted us to.
You definitely go through a period of, well, maybe if I'd have done that, maybe if I'd have done that. But the one thing I've always been with Keith Moon is really honest. I was never one of the ones to say, oh, Keith, have another pill, have another drink. I was always really honest with him when I thought he was going over the top. I was always wanting to get in there and get the hell out of it, you know. So, yes and no, I was always honest with him. It was very strange because when Keith died, they did a programme on BBC Radio in England of things that we'd said about Keith about 4 years before. And one of the things I said, which I didn't realise would ever come true, was that Keith Moon was a man who lived a lifetime every day of his life, a whole lifetime in one day. And he was just such a restless soul. He would never ever find what he was looking for in this life. And it was the inevitable. It was inevitable that it would happen the way it did. It was a shame it was such a terrible accident. But I could never have seen Keith Moon old. He could never have grown old gracefully. I could never have seen Keith Moon unable to play his drums, which would have been one of the things that would have happened by getting old. The only thing that really shook us is that we were expecting it for 10 years. And yet when it came, it was a surprise. I mean, that was what really kicked us in. But in the end, like I say, it's made us grow. It's made men of us. His legacy is it's cut all the chains from our feet and it's set us free to do anything we want to do. And the most wonderful thing that has happened is that everybody just wants to do it with you. Whereas before, we were just flying off at tangents. I feel that The Who were a band that if we'd have tried to get other members in, I think it would have been very difficult for people to accept it because we'd gone on so long as the same lineup. But I feel if any one of us had gone and the band decided to, it immediately frees you of that. We can go on now with a brass section, we can have side men, we can do anything we like, and people have got to expect nothing because everything from now on is a bonus, mate, you know? And that's the way we feel about it. Here's another track from Quadrophenia, and I think it's probably the most aggressive number on the album. It's a schizophrenic song in itself. It's about the other side of a drinking man, the drunk side and the sober side. It's a number called Dr. Jimmy. That was another track from Quadrophenia, and this is Roger Daltrey. This is Roger Daltrey, and I'm playing some tracks from our album Quadrophenia, and we've just made a film of the same album. I am very worried that people, Who fans, are going to miss so much of the music, but like I say, not a lot of the music worked in the film. What we left in and what we took out was literally by trying that thing and saying no, that thing saying yes. Simple as that.
I think every rock group and every artist, every filmmaker, but most particularly The Who, are in a very delicate position at the moment with everybody being so conscious of the glorious 60s, if you like. And I understand Hair, along with Quadrophenia and our own film, is enjoying great popularity. There is a great sort of sense of like looking back going on at the moment. There's great nostalgia, there's a great resurgence of a lot of the ideals of the periods of the 60s. I hear the Woodstock Festival is coming back. For us, really, the problem is an acute one, because as a band, we've always, right from the very start, been economists. We've never wasted a chance to follow something through, however old it's been. You know, the gap between, well, the original Tommy album was produced in 68, the film wasn't made till 75. With Quadrophenia, the album was produced in 73, and the film is being made today, so, you know, like 6 years later. Our audience today provides us with a great challenge, because on the surface it seems to be the same kids with the same feelings and the same needs, and of course we're very different now. You know, we were 19, 20 when we started, and we're 35, we've got families, not with grown-up children, but they're damn near grown-up, and occasionally making attempts to behave like they're grown-up. We've got problems, for example, in a physical level, that we can't sustain the kind of physical energy that we made for 15 years. Sometimes it feels a bit silly behaving in the way that a rock star is expected to behave. It feels absurd to smash a guitar on the stage. It feels absurd to sing My Generation. But you do it because you're celebrating your past. But the kids out there in that audience, it's the same football game. It's the same crowd. It's the same hand waving. It's the same sentiments. I wonder why they're there. I wonder why they're there. Every time I go out on the stage, I wonder, why are they there? What do they get from one another? What do they get from us? It's been a question that a lot of people have tried to answer, and I think it's almost impossible to answer. It's fascinating. It's obsessed me all my life, and it's why I'm still more interested in rock and roll music than anything else.
Well, Who are never going to be a disco band. I mean, we're an alternative to disco. We're a rock and roll band. I think on the last album, there were signs of something new germinating, like in Music Must Change, which is almost out-and-out jazz. Not that we're going to become a jazz band. The new lineup, we've got keyboards, so we've got more freedom on stage. We don't try and speak for the kids of today. We're still encapsulating the problems of our generation. And I really do feel that is the importance of The Who, and why I'm really am proud of what we have done over the past. For instance, you do go through a period of your life when you're between 30 and 35. For the first time in your life, you realise you're mortal, and it creates a lot of problems. You think adolescence is painful, and then that comes out and whacks you around the back of the head. We got an album out called Who By Numbers, which wasn't very well received by the critics. In retrospect, I think it's absolutely brilliant, because it encapsulates that feeling. And I feel if we can go on doing that, encapsulating the feelings of people as they go through their lives and help them through hard times by understanding the hard times, then we're winning. That's the way we've started, and that's the way we'll go on. This is the last track from Quadrophenia, and it's the end of the album, and it also is the end song in the film. And it's a number called Love Rain or Me. This is Roger Daltrey, and I've just played a little selection from the forthcoming film Quadrophenia. And I'd like to say that we will definitely be touring America. I think we're doing 2 weeks on the East Coast before Christmas, and we'll be doing extensive 2-week stints all over the country next spring, which will be great. I'm really looking forward to it, because America made us. I mean, England and America were the places that made us. This is Roger Daltrey again. It is very interesting to me that a lot of the new bands are Who fanatics. But there again, it isn't really surprising when you realise how profound Pete Townshend's writings were for the time. I mean, they're timeless. They apply to all kids of all generations, and it really is timeless. I mean, one thing we don't try and do now is pretend that we speak for the kids now, because we ain't kids, and that's all over with. Our generation still hasn't gone away. They haven't all curled up and died. They're all out there somewhere. But it's a good feeling to feel that you've made an impression somewhere on kids. I don't deplore anything kids do. I think it's wonderful. All of it's wonderful. All youth is violent. All youth... so urgent, there is no time for articulate expression. That's why it's violent. It's wonderful. I don't deplore any of it. I mean, the more power to youth's elbow. And I think that's one thing that rock and roll's given it. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't like it all, but I don't... I understand it, which is a different thing.
I think it's both indicative of the confusion of the time to some extent. You know, the punk rock movement in the UK was a vitally interesting thing to me because I always wonder why they razed everything, you know, why they destroyed everything before they carried on. Because to some extent you always have to look back, you always have to lean on what's been before. I mean, for us in our period as a group like the Stones and the Beatles, there was... the foundation stone of rock, R&B, of black blues, of English and European folk music and jazz and stuff like that. We've always thought in that way, you know, use what is there and then go ahead. And to a great extent, we now know that we've got to, at least for The Who, this is our next project, is definitely, we've definitely got to bring the music and the visuals together on the same day. On the same day, you know, it's got to be done on the same day. This is the great challenge for us. People look back when the present doesn't offer enough. That's my idea of the whole thing. I think when the present day is a vacuum, you know, in the music business, we always say that there's a great English blues man called John Mayall. And we always joke about, it's not to sneer at his credibility, because he, as I said, he is a great British blues man and he brought forth people like Clapton and people like this. We always say when there's a lull in the rock business, John Mayall is successful. And I think it happens to everyone. I think it's happening to some extent in the entertainment industry. You look at the theatre shows that there are in London. There's a thing about Fat Charlie, which has been doing well for years. I obviously these things do arrive in Britain sometimes a bit late, but the Tommy Show was very successful on the London stage.
Only love. Hi, this is Roger Daltrey of The Who. Our music has got a hell of a lot tighter with a new drummer. It's got a hell of a lot tighter. I mean, it is a new band. That's the one thing people must realise. It's a new band. People must realise that the time Keith died, it was the end of an era. Nobody knows better than us that it can never be the same. Never, ever. That is finished. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful time. We lost a brother and a friend. But we go on, and there's no reason to say it won't be better. And it's looking that way at the moment, and it's really great. The band is tighter than ever. Playing with more conviction, more energy. Look out, that's what I'm saying. We're setting a pretty high standard. We are definitely still a rock and roll band. There is that one number, The Music Must Change, which is almost jazz, but generally I don't like jazz. I don't find it too... it doesn't get me in the guts, which rock and roll does. It sometimes gets rid of a headache, but that's about it.
But of course we are faced with the fact that our audience is always increasing, always growing, and that the audience for rock is growing with the world's population and with the fact that with increasing wealth and every home has a record player, and these kids grow up with rock and roll music. They don't grow up with the kind of music that I grew up with. And so it's actually really in their blood. They take it for granted and they demand it, and they demand the self-consciousness and the social consciousness and the review of political events and human events that it seems to cover. I suppose really what fires you up when you sit down to write a song is always something very, very powerful. I don't sit down and write out of any sense of duty. I sit down and write because something's in me. I spoke to a guy from a European radio station. He hit me with a very funny question. He said, when was the last time you cried? And I thought about it, and I remembered that last Thursday I cried all morning over something that had happened to me, something personal. I can't talk about it. And I suppose that's what makes you sit down and write. Not that everybody doesn't, or not that a lot of people don't, but I think there's still a hell of a lot of things to cry about. And we can only affect what we can reach. And one beautiful thing about music and film is that it reaches a little bit further than I'm willing to travel. I hope that we can now grow up and let our music grow up so that we're not just dealing with some of our own petty problems and our own petty little things, you know, whether or not we're making it with the kid down the street that we fancy or whether or not we're making it in a football game, and start to grow up to the... Not that social conscience ever changed a damn thing. I'm not saying it doesn't. I mean, what changes things is people joining and go and do some work at that level. But for music, the thing is, it's not necessarily to pretend that we can do the work and change things. We can provide the heart energy. We can provide the joy, if you like. Rock and roll is always a finely balanced mixture of the two qualities, about crying and about, let's put it this way, rock and roll is a balance between aspiration and frustration. Always has been, and that's what makes it good.
This is Roger Daughtry again.
For me, the most important thing is the band. Number one, full stop, and it always has been. I don't have to prove it anymore. If I wanted to be a film star, I could have done it very easy after Tommy. I'm not into that. I like making good films, and I'd like to be taken seriously as an actor. And I'm determined to make it as an actor, but not at the expense of the band, with the band with me. That's really how I see it. And the music for the band is going to get better and better.
Hi, this is Roger Daughtry of The Who.
Now, I don't like disco personally, but I, for everyone that likes it, there's one that hates it, which pushes, you know, I think it's all necessary. There's a lot of things I really like that's going on at the moment. There's a lot that went on that I didn't like. A lot of the early punk stuff was so bad, and it went on for so long with so much press coverage, people started to think it was good, some of it. But there's the good people always come through in the end, people like Costello. The Police would be a big band, because they are a good band. I don't know about The Clash. They don't impress me, because some of the things they say, it's not only naive, it's just downright thick. I would like it if people like, you know, John Lennon came back and did something, because I think they're sadly missed. People like that are very sadly missed. I can understand what groups like The Clash and that are saying. We said it about Elvis Presley and all the rest of them. I hope they've got the intellect and the music to back up their statements. Because I personally don't think they have. And as far as young kids and The Who go, we're drawing more young kids now than we were back in 64. Which is wonderful. Pete Townshend's songs are timeless. I mean, if The Clash are going to do what we've done, then they're going to have to write things better than My Generation, better than Substitute, better than Can't Explain, better than Tommy, better than Quadrophenia, better than all that. All right, and if they can do that, then I'll take my hat off and I say, well done, lads. But like I say, I understand what they're saying and I know how they feel, because I said exactly the same things about Elvis and all that. But we put music where our mouths were.
Why should I care?